Dear listener, we accept the fact that you have to sacrifice a whole hour to listen to whatever it is we're about to do wrong, and what we will do is wrong. You see us the way you want to see us, in the simplest of terms, in the most convenient definitions, but we found out that each one of us is a brain.
An athlete.
A princess.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Geek Movie Club.
Hello and welcome to the Geek Movie Club episode number 2, the podcast that can't quite decide whether it's weekly, fortnightly, or monthly. I'm David McVeigh.
I'm the weekly Richard Gray.
And the monthly David Longo.
Hello, boys. Sorry it's been so long.
I forgot. Second comes right after first.
I'd forgotten that we did this show.
Yeah, I was kind of going, oh, we're going to do the other show. What show?
I just turned up from behind the panels and you kept me here.
So for our listeners out there, Geek Movie Club for the moment is probably going to be a little bit erratic.
For the moment.
Erratic.
We think that the show is probably going to be monthly.
The weekly show we started 2 months ago when we're up to episode 2.
Yeah, exactly. It was probably going to be monthly, but, you know, there will be an episode next week because there's a big film coming out, so we have to do it next week. So. Yeah. It's erratic. It's the show with no specific release date at this point. This, for those who are new to this show, is basically our weekly, fortnightly, or monthly rant about the entertainment industry and pretty much anything else we want to talk about, because there's no real structure or no real rules to this show. Dave Longo, how have you been? I haven't seen you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I've been pretty good. How about you, Dave?
Not too bad.
I've been lost in the making of movies that were pretty bad.
Can you give us an update on the making of your movie? Because for those who don't know, David Longo is a filmmaker and actively working as a filmmaker.
We've shot a feature film and it's in the editing stage at the moment. But what we shot 2 weeks ago was actually a short film. Which, interesting story though, we lost all the footage for one day of that shooting.
Oh, good lord.
We put the card into our computer to upload the footage and it was all corrupted.
Backup.
I know, tell me about it. But there's a good postscript to that story though. We took it into a place called Photo Lab. Thank you, Photo Lab. And they recovered all of our footage.
Oh, gotta love data recovery.
At a very costly price though.
Yeah, data recovery is fairly expensive. So what was the short film about?
I didn't direct it though. I was just doing cinematography. Mm-hmm. It's called Blind. It's quite cool actually. It's like about a blind girl and a mute girl who team up and investigate this crime.
Interesting.
And where is this?
It's like
gonna,
a Hardy Boys.
Is this going to debut on YouTube?
Sounds like an NBC TV series.
Depends. Like I'm not sort of in control of the post of it. Like so maybe in the next month or two we might see something on YouTube.
Okay, cool. Nice. We'll let people know about the link to that. Richard, what have you been up to?
I have been up to... I haven't been doing much at all, actually.
We've all been working, though, really, haven't we?
I've been working, watching a lot of TV. I'll talk about Doctor Who in a minute. But, I've just been catching up on stuff. Probably doing more stuff for the other show. Doing more stuff for Behind the Panels. Which is more regular. And I also do reviews for Newsarama and places like that. So it's been keeping me quite busy.
You've also de-spammed your website, I hear.
Yeah, look, for those of you who have been regular readers of therealbits.com but never bookmarked it and only ever found it through Google, might have found that they were being led off to a pharmacy website from Google. For no purpose. It's basically a really common WordPress
virus. Read the real bits, get Viagra.
Yeah. Well, I always found reading the real bits got me hard. So...
Who needs
Cialis when you've got therealbits.com? That's therealbits.com. Gets you hard every time.
If symptoms persist over 4 hours, see a doctor.
Yeah, if you've been reading The Real Bits for 4 hours or more.
Seek medical attention.
Definitely seek medical attention.
Well, I got to tell you, I haven't been doing a huge amount of anything. So what's happening over there in the world of Longo? You seem to be...
I don't have any sound in my headphones.
Try the plug that's up there, perhaps, or try and turn your volume up.
Yeah, I did that. Didn't really.
How's that? Is that any better?
A little bit better.
A little bit. Well, I don't know what's going on with you. Oh, well, anyway, as long as we don't play any clips,
guys,
I guess you'll be fine.
That was some very entertaining theater of the mind.
We do it live to hard drive, people. Live to hard drive. All right. Now, I haven't actually been doing a whole lot over the last couple weeks because we've been remodeling the studio, redesigning all the wiring, and we got air conditioning finally, which is something that long-term listeners of this network will know that we've been bitching about for a long time.
There's red curtains in here, David.
And there's red curtains.
I feel like we should be in the corner. Like
I was having a David Lynch moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's better burn suit.
The bubble gum on her shoulder.
We are going to, once everything is together in this studio, we're going to put some pictures on the Facebook site so people can see what we've actually been up to. And
people see what we look like, how big our beards are now.
Yeah.
Actually, one thing, I think, just speaking of beards, one thing I did do in the last week is I saw a band I've been wanting to see for...
Oh, tell me about it.
About 15 years. They haven't toured for about 10 years or something. They just disappeared off the face of the map. They're a band called Neutral Milk Hotel. Sort of freak folk, if you're familiar with that genre. Sufjan Stevens, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know Sufjan Stevens.
This guy, Jeff Mangum, kind of did this brilliant album called In the Aeroplane Over the Sea, 1998, kind of got big. They sort of freaked out, I guess, a little bit, and then just didn't tour for years and years and years and years. Suddenly reformed, suddenly touring on that album, a few of their other albums. No new material, just the classic stuff. And it was brilliant. And,
oh, excellent.
And can you just indulge me for a second while I just play you 20
sure,
seconds
go for
off
it.
This?
Yeah.
What a beautiful face I have found in this place that is circling all around the sun. What a beautiful dream that could flash on the screen in a blink of an eye and be gone from me. Soft and sweet.
That was the title track off In the Aeroplane Over the Sea, which... amazing album.
That's lovely.
The first track on there is called The King of Carrot Flowers, and it gets really freaky at different points. I mean, that's one of the nicer tracks on there, but it's the second track kicks off, which is The King of Carrot Flowers part 2 and 3, kicks off with him screaming "I love you, Jesus Christ" over and over again, I think tongue-in-cheek. But it was so weird to be in a room full of people screaming that out, and I thought I was
weren't at church.
I thought I was at Hillsong for for a brief minute, but it was wonderful. It was kind of like, you know, I'd just been transported back 15 years. Music has an amazingly transformative quality.
Oh, absolutely.
So it was wonderful to finally see that. Bucket list checked.
Fantastic.
So there you go.
Well, I'm definitely going to get that tonight, actually.
Yeah, it's a great album.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
like
really,
Flaming Lips kind of.
Yeah, it's got a lovely sound.
They're very influential on Arcade Fire.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah.
Well, that's a fantastic. So, seeing as we are kind of in that realm now, let's talk a little bit about what we've been listening to, watching, reading, whatever it is we want to talk about. Dave Longo. Tell me about Man of Steel.
I just bought the Blu-ray, came out.
Is there a new Superman movie?
Hey, yeah. And you know, like, if you watch the behind the scenes special features, there's like a 45-minute documentary on how he became the Man of Steel.
Wasn't that the movie? That was the first 45 minutes of the movie.
No, I mean, like, how he physically.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, I wanted to bring this up specifically. Have you noticed how every Hollywood DVD release these days has to have like a 40-minute documentary on how the actor like pumped weights?
Yeah.
You know, how, like, you mean how he ate the right things and did the right exercise
and how difficult it was, and how the people from 300 trained him? And
do you know if you?
But I watched the movie as well.
Did they yell "This is Sparta" a lot while they were doing it?
Do you know if you play Man of Steel backwards?
It's a steel of man.
The soundtrack would probably be the same, though.
General, General Zod gets his head back or something.
Spoilers. So, your second watching of Man of Steel, any better?
It was, like, I guess.
No, I'm fishing here because, of course, I also bought the Blu-ray and I rewatched Man of Steel as well. And I just wanted to hear if you actually thought it got any better, because I actually enjoyed it better the second time around.
It took me about 3 sittings to actually get through the whole thing.
But that's only because you kept stopping.
I kept stopping and watching the behind the scenes.
Every time your shirt off, you paused it for 20 minutes, right?
No, that was only 3 times in the movie, right? I paused it for a really long time when he broke Zod's neck.
Yeah.
Spoilers!
I was kind of like, if you haven't seen it by now, you're not going to watch
it. It's on Blu-ray. What's our rule?
Once it's on Blu-ray, spoilers.
I mean, if you haven't seen Man of Steel yet and you're listening to
Geek Movie Club.
There's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You know, we will reiterate, just for those people who have missed the mountains of episodes of this show, the whole one, that have come out of our rule on spoilers. If one is at the movies, we will actually give a fair spoiler warning and only do spoilers within a contained warning. After 2 weeks, is that right?
We can start talking more spoilers. Once it's on Blu-ray,
all bets are off.
Yeah.
I just got a bit of a rant to go on about
Oh, television was 2 weeks.
You know, like, have you That's guys... Right. Do you guys love Blu-ray special features?
Me too.
Yeah, yes. Like, I absolutely adore it. Like, we're geeks. We're movie geeks. Like, that's what we love.
Well, it's what actually sucked me into DVD in the first
absolutely.
Place.
And I used to be that guy where I would only buy a Blu-ray or a DVD depending on what the extra content
is. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I would actually pick things up and go, oh, it's a vanilla release with nothing on it.
Yeah,
I'll
exactly.
wait for
Forget
the double
it.
Dip. Yeah.
Forget I'll wait for it to be on TV. You know, if I want to watch the movie again, I'll watch the movie again. You know, like, sometimes there's...
Oh, buy the iTunes version.
Yeah, exactly. You know, or I'll acquire it. God forbid. You know,
oh, you mean borrow it from the internet?
From the video store.
Oh, you mean watching it on Foxtel? Of course.
Yeah, we'll do that. When our internet speeds are working well enough.
Yeah.
Those who don't know, my internet is gone and I'm in pain.
It's true. I can actually feel it from here.
But first thing I did was I just watched the behind the scenes features, and I'm getting sick and tired of like there being no special features on these films anymore. Like Avengers, you know, it's like...
Actually, one of the things that took me to Blu-ray, I got to tell you, one of the things that actually finally made me make the jump to Blu-ray, because I wasn't going to go to Blu-ray. I've got all these DVDs. Why was I going to make another shift? Mm. Was the fact they started to release movies with exclusive bonuses just on Blu-ray.
What's really annoying, though, is that they seem to be, despite that, and this is one that's really annoying because this is Warner, is that Warner do their movies region-free, so you think you're getting the same copy worldwide. Mm. But... The US Blu-ray has a stack more bonus features than the Australian one, which baffles me. And I mean, sure, it's snack content.
It's completely
but, you know.
Baffling. I agree with you. Like, in particular, one of my most biggest hated things of last year was the Avengers Blu-ray. You know, there's only one feature I asked for. It's the audio commentary. You can put anything else you want.
Steven Spielberg, are you listening?
He'll never do.
No, he's always said Spielberg's exact quote, I think from memory, was something along the lines of he says he thinks of audio commentaries as being the annoying guy who talks through the movie.
And this is so rich because he in the same interview I've read this interview in the same interview he goes, one of the greatest experiences I ever had was sitting with David Lean watching Lawrence of Arabia, and David Lean talked me through the making of that entire film.
Yeah,
it's like so hypocritical. Can you imagine, like, when Spielberg's gone, having these, you know...
Maybe
like,
secretly he has actually recorded commentaries for every one of his films, where after he's gone, they'll all come out.
Yeah.
Or
no,
maybe David Lean's that more annoying guy in the cinema that he's talking about.
Yeah, maybe that's
all
the
that
moment.
David Lean.
Bottom line is...
It was really hot this day.
If we bring this back, though, Man of Steel, way back again, Man of Steel, a better viewing on... Once you get past the hype of the film coming out, you get past all that nonsense, you actually sit down and you watch it and you go, as a Superman film, it still sucks. Sucks. It's not Superman. However, as just a balls-to-the-wall action film with a guy who happens to have superpowers... Yeah, it's actually kind of fun.
It's still like heavily misogynist in parts.
Absolutely, and there's still the sense of destruction, and there's and there's still the finale, which I just can't shake. But
neither can Zod for that.
I actually like Michael Shannon a lot more the second time watching it.
I will find him.
I will find you.
Was that General Zod or was that Adam West? I will find him.
Yeah, it's like. I picture him like with a paint shaker up his ass like the whole time. He's always like trembling and just like
take this parrot out of my ass.
Shannon's fantastic and I love him and everything. We're talking about Take Shelter before the show. If you haven't watched Boardwalk Empire, check him out in that. But I only realized recently when I was watching Boardwalk Empire that he's playing Rex Banner from The Simpsons in that series. If you remember the Prohibition episode?
Yes. That is awesome.
You blew my mind just then. I will find you, Beer Baron. No, you won't. Yes, I will. No, you won't.
That is awesome. So we should probably talk a little bit about television because we often talk about television. And I still don't actually have a theme for television, but I think you did.
No, I don't.
No? Okay, you got nothing to play for me?
Let me see. What's this button do?
It's Richard.
No, that's not it.
That's not it.
Let's see. Let's play this.
No, that's not it.
Perfect because we all watch Walking Dead.
I did watch Walking Dead. How about I just play this one? That'll do. Okay. So leading us into television, we're still kicking off with the fall season. We can go back and listen.
Oh, wait, sorry.
I'm watching you, Wazowski. Always watching.
I knew you had
it,
something.
It wasn't TV specific, but it...
I knew you had something. The only ones that I want to talk about this week, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Arrow, we talk about ad nauseum in panels, mm-hmm. so we'll talk about them there. But I did watch the pilot episode. Now, I'm a few weeks behind on this one, obviously, but I watched the pilot episode of Sleepy Hollow, the new series, which has now been getting some mixed reviews, and so I don't know what the series is actually kicked on with, but the pilot episode's a corker. I really, really enjoyed the pilot episode, and I thought this could lead to a fantastic series. It's basically, for lack of a better word, a Buffy for today. He's woken up today, and it's him and this police officer who are basically trying to unravel the mysteries of the devil and, you know, the headless horseman and all this sort of stuff. And it's actually not bad. Though on the other side of the spectrum, there was The Tomorrow People, which is the American remake of the old British sci-fi series, which is lots of pretty people doing pretty things with superpowers. So, and that one kind of left me like, yeah, I could live it, take or leave this one. It's Smallville with teleportation powers, you know? Yeah. What have you been watching, Dave?
I went to see The Counselor, unfortunately. I think you've seen The Counselor.
Let's get into this.
Okay. I'll start us.
Yeah.
Two things about The Counselor.
Yeah. I can think of one of them. Yeah.
Is it Ridley Scott?
Well, there's that as
well. So Ridley Scott directed. And so we know he's made some good films.
Can I preface this by saying that Cormac McCarthy might be my favourite author
of
all time. Yeah. So,
and what happens when you put them two together, Richard?
A complete clusterfuck.
Go for it, dude.
Look, I was so looking forward to this film because Cormac McCarthy, when the film was announced, that he turned up to his publisher, whose publisher was expecting a novel, and he turned up with a screenplay because he was really excited. And obviously, I think he'd been sort of enthused by the response to No Country for Old Men, which he'd actually originally written as a screenplay. No one would buy it, so he adapted it into a novel, and then it ironically got adapted back into a screenplay.
I can tell you another story about that. Actually, it was just a sidebar for a second with a little tangent. Braveheart was the exact same thing. When he wrote the screenplay to Braveheart,
Not Cormac McCarthy.
What's his name?
Wallace.
Randall Wallace wrote Braveheart.
No relation.
Nobody would touch it. No, I want to take that back. Yeah, no, it wasn't Braveheart. Sorry, it was Dances with Wolves, not Brandon.
Dances with Wolves. Yeah.
He wrote Dances with Wolves as a screenplay. Nobody would touch it. They said, write it as a book. So he converted it to a book, released it as a novel. Then it got optioned back to Hollywood, where he then converted it back to a screenplay.
And with Dances with Wolves and No Country for Old Men, that worked. With Cormac McCarthy's screenplay, well, let's face it, the film is flawed at a screenplay level. Mm-hmm.
Let's just say it. It's the truth, right? It is Cormac McCarthy's fault.
A lot of it's Cormac McCarthy's fault. Stylistically, it's not great either.
But no amount of brilliant filmmaking acting could say this.
But let's be absolutely honest here. Ridley Scott is not the master that he used to be.
He shoots it well.
He shoots well.
It's shot well.
His lack of judgment.
It's badly edited as well. I mean, it's chaotic. It's a mess. Everyone's talking about this one scene, which
was the highlight of the movie, actually.
which is possibly, I'm going to say Charlize Theron, possibly Cameron Diaz's body double, I imagine, doing the splits over the hood of a car on the windscreen of a car and humping the screen as a show for Javier Bardem's character.
Didn't she pretty much do the same thing in Bad Teacher?
Oh, this is something else.
It's described as Javier Bardem's describing it to us, and he says it's like one of those sucker fish on the side of an aquarium. And he said it's not even sexual; it's gynecological. You know,
I'm sorry. In the film, do you actually see this?
No.
About to say.
Well, you see it from behind,
and
yeah.
You hear it. You hear like you know.
A little bit like when Bart hits the window in the movie, right?
Yeah. Or in that Simpsons episode where Homer's in naked in the hot air balloon, and he's in the and there's the glass top church. Yes. Going, look, everybody, up to the roof. Look to the floor. Look to God's floor. But it's that. But I mean that's not the worst part of the film. That's probably a highlight of the film. Like the film is just. Like, we're talking about an amazing cast here too. Brad Pitt, Javier Bardem, Cameron Diaz is good when she's good.
Penelope Cruz.
Penelope.
Penelope. That's a lovely drink, the Penelope.
I believe that was in the original James Bond. He walked up and said, I'll have a penelope, please.
Shaken, not stirred. With a little umbrella.
A little twist of, yeah.
Also, Dean Norris from Breaking Bad's in it. John Leguizamo was in it.
Yeah,
for like
just, I've forgotten about
screen
that.
Time. Like,
yeah, look, it's just so over the place.
It's the movie that introduces, what, 20 characters in the last act?
Yeah.
You know, and all
so
of
it's,
them.
So basically, it's a pilot for a TV show.
That's actually spot on. I would go a step further. It feels like a whole season.
But that's exactly how I felt. I saw David Lynch's Mulholland Drive, which turned out to be a pilot that failed, and they turned it into a feature film. But the problem with that film is the fact that every 5 minutes a new character is being introduced who never comes back.
And that's exactly what I think. Dave was actually saying that before the show. That's exactly what happened to this thing. Look, it's a mess. I think it's probably destined for cult audiences.
Sorry, Richard. I think we have to mention, though, it's also like deeply unsettling. It's very cruel. It's like a punishing film to watch. Like, it almost celebrates in its like cynicism.
Yeah,
like this is a movie that asks
references
you to
snuff
watch
films as
snuff
well.
Films like brutal violence against women. Every second conversation is about how women are ruining
it. Fails the
Earth.
Bechdel test, you know, formally.
No, it passes the Bechdel
does
test.
It? Does it have two?
No, it does, because Penelope Cruz and Cameron Diaz talk to each other about diamonds.
Oh, that's true. There you go.
I guess.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Yeah, well, I think it sounds like a film I'm going to avoid.
But this is a movie that almost, like, a friend of mine mentioned when we walked out of it, that if you look at this through the lens of Cormac McCarthy and Ridley Scott attempting to make a movie that dares you to walk out of it, then maybe you'll get something out of it. Because, like, how punishing this movie is...
Oh, we forgot Fassbender. We forgot to mention
Michael Fassbender.
Whose
name is the
counselor. Who is the lead character, yeah. He's the... you know, he has some great moments.
Does he get
it?
His enormous penis out in this movie?
No.
Close.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it does close.
Yeah, they get their ego.
The opening scene, you knew something was up, because the opening scene is done entirely two character dialogue between Michael Fassbender and Penelope Cruz. Two beautiful that forever she on the show should be known as Penelope Cruz.
Penelope Cruz.
Two people and two beautiful looking people under a sheet. You know, you don't see them for the first time.
And you can tell it's trying to go for this sort of avant-garde, like, you know, very arty kind of film thing.
Yeah,
just,
but
it looks laughable.
It is.
It looks like they're playing.
It's
like,
kind of like, you know, Oliver Stone's U-Turn or something like that.
Oh, I hated that film. Like, I hated that film. Yeah. If it's like Oliver Stone's U-Turn, I'm out.
Yeah.
and like, this is the kind of movie, Dave, like, because Dave hasn't seen it, where they actually have a sequence where, like, a woman, I won't say who, is in, like, a, what do you call those construction site machines, the dumpster or whatever?
Yeah.
Where they just,
they
lower her into a tip. They just drop her into all this rubbish. And it's kind of like, that is symbolic of this movie.
Yeah.
Like, ultimate point. It's just like, in life, everything is rubbish. Everything is waste. They mention it every 5 seconds, like we're born to die, and you walk out of this movie.
I think I will wait for DVD on this.
Richard,
one.
What's your final thoughts?
Yeah, like I think what you said, a metaphor for garbage is exactly what it is.
Fair enough. Well, we need to move on.
That was fun reviewing a
that
movie.
That was fun. We'll be reviewing Catching Fire next week. Reviews aren't a huge part of this show, but we'll do it every now and again. I need a theme for running Richard, because Richard, you have been continuing the ongoing voyages of Doctor Who.
BBC One. Now, here's Doctor Who.
People, it's been a massive week for Doctor Who. We are less than a week away from the 50th anniversary.
Absolutely.
And a lot of stuff's been happening. In my marathon, I am now up to the third Doctor. John Pertwee. Be theorist, Joe.
Yeah, you did have a lisp, didn't
he? Be theorist, Joe. Reverse the, reverse the polarity of the neutron flow.
Is that really how it sounds?
Yes, he does. This is the Doctor with a cape. And he's a Victorian dandy, basically.
Yes.
He's great. Like, I mean, in the first episode, he has a shower, and you notice, because Pertwee's led such an interesting life, he's got tats up his arms and stuff like that. So, like, he used to be in the service. So he's got, like, his Navy tattoo on his arm and stuff like that. But he is the adventurer. He is the James Bond for the 70s. They completely reworked the show by this stage. It was the first episode in colour. Spearhead from Space, which was his first episode, was the first one released in Blu-ray. because it was the only one shot entirely on 16mm film.
So they could actually high def it. Yeah,
yeah, and they and it looks fantastic, and it looks completely incongruous with the rest of the episodes because you kind of got this feature movie in the middle of all these, you know, studio bound productions, because a lot of it was studio bound. The whole credo of the, at least the first couple of years of the Pertwee years, was that they had less money. They'd gone to colour, which was expensive in those days, but they had all the stories were earthbound. It was like him stuck on Earth.
It was also where they really kicked into, SHIELD. It wasn't SHIELD.
UNIT.
UNIT. It was where UNIT came in big time. Yeah.
Yeah, UNIT, the United Nations Intelligence Task Force, which is basically this military organization led by the Brigadier, Lethbridge Stewart, who actually turned up back in the Troughton years originally, but they made him an ongoing character. And I'm really enjoying it because these are the ones that I first started watching when I first started getting into it. I'm going through them really quickly. I think I'm almost finished the second season of his run because they're shorter serials and less of them, and when you get into his run. So I'm now something like 270.
Well, I was telling you before the show that my first Doctor Who experience, which was actually first run, it was back in the 70s, was actually nearing the end of Pertwee's era. It was actually where they brought the Santarans in for the first time.
Ah, the Santarans.
And then he, of course, turned into Tom Baker, and Tom Baker ended up becoming my Doctor. So you're catching up to the era where I jumped into
this. How far away is Tom Baker?
Tom Baker's the immediate one afterwards. But Pertwee goes for about 4 or 5 years, I think. Like 4 years.
He was the second longest running Doctor, up to Baker. I mean, well, Baker.
Technically speaking, even though he was only in one movie, Paul McGann might be the longest running Doctor because he's been doing it the longest in audio adventures.
That's true.
And this week, now look, this is going to be a massive spoiler if you haven't watched the video yet. If you haven't watched Night of the Doctor yet,
pause this podcast, go spend 5 minutes and then come back.
And I'm giving all that spoiler warning now, but millions of people have done this. It's literally, there's one headline that said this video melted the internet because it was a prequel to the 50th anniversary episode, which featured the return of a previous Doctor to the screen for the first time in a number of years.
No way.
Yes way.
That's okay now. Everyone who's left the room needs to leave? Okay, good. Because this happened.
I'm trying to send a distress signal. Stop talking about doctors.
I'm a doctor. But probably not the one you're expecting.
That was the return of Paul McGann to the screen after, almost 20 years. 1996 was his movie.
Yeah.
And it was a one-off movie, telemovie that wasn't great.
I actually rewatched that about 3 weeks ago. It's actually on QuickFlix streaming. Mm. And I watched it with Nicholas, and it was really interesting watching Eric Roberts as the master.
You got Eric Roberts is the bad guy. He had Grace Holloway was his companion.
It's all set in San Francisco.
Eric Roberts had short roundies, his sidekick or something. And it was all set in San Francisco. It was the attempt to make Doctor Who an American franchise as well. It was the first attempt at the reboot.
Failed. It was a co-BBC, whatever the American network was, production. Doctor Who went through a very tumultuous period there because basically being cancelled.
It had already been off the air for 7 years at that stage.
Correct. They did that movie hoping that would be the pilot to a new series. That didn't work. At one point, Steven Spielberg had the rights,
and he
wanted to actually produce a new series.
He wanted to do it as a film, I think.
Yeah, and he was really interested in bringing Doctor Who. That never happened, and then it fell into Russell T. Davies' hands, who finally, eventually, re-kicked off the thing.
And that wasn't until 2005.
Yeah.
And then when he brought that back, there was this gap, because Paul McGann's Doctor was canon. They said he was...
We also know that he was canon, though, because he actually regenerates... From
Sylvester McCoy.
Sylvester McCoy, who was the last Doctor when it was cancelled. So at the beginning of the movie is Sylvester McCoy.
Because Sylvester McCoy wanted to come back. He wanted to give his character closure. He loved the character so much, he was willing to come back and close it off. And now finally, after all these years, when Russell T. Davies' series started, there was a new Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, but we didn't know what had happened to McGann, what had happened in between. And as we've reached the end of, as we're approaching the 50th, we found out about John Hurt, who's an in-between Doctor. Finally, we get to see in this video Paul McGann regenerating into John Hurt. And I didn't know. Someone just sent me the link and said, this happened while you were out.
Yeah.
And that's all they said. I think that was, I'm sorry, I'm going to get it wrong. It was either Snake Oz or Alessio, one of the two. I can't remember who. I'm sorry. I've forgotten who it is. But there was a lot of tweeting that night, let me tell you. I sat down and watched it with no reference to what was going to be in it. I knew it was a prequel. second that Paul McGann comes on screen, I lost my shit. Like, it was wonderful. Like, you know, as a fan, if the internet melted because, you know, that sound you heard was as if a million voices cried out McGann, never to be silenced again.
No, but also, when we came into the rebooted Doctor Who, they talk about the Time War, they talk about the death of the Daleks and the Gallifreyans, and they talk about all this. And we assumed, because of the time period that has taken place, that it was the Christopher Eccleston Doctor who was involved in all of that, because he was kind of bitter and twisted anyway. Now we're finally getting that middle story. We're finally finding out how the Time War happened, and it's the John Hurt Doctor who actually did all of this, because he's listed at the end of that, which I think is magnificent.
Sorry, it wasn't either of those people. It was Quintaris. Thank you, Quintaris.
At the end of this little 5-minute movie, it actually says, "And introducing John Hurt as the War Doctor." Okay. You know, And it's like, yeah, baby.
What's the actual story of the 50th?
Well, we don't know. Film. It's been very, very closely guarded. All we know is that it's going to be the historic meeting of the 10th and 11th Doctors.
Yeah, it's Tennant and
Smith.
Smith.
The trailer's
online now. You can actually see it.
The trailer tells you very little, which is great. Yeah. It's very refreshing.
Did you see the second trailer?
Which one was that?
The one where I actually see them talking to each other and stuff like that?
Yeah, there's a little bit longer.
Because this is kind of the Doctor Who movie. Kind of.
It is. It's a 75-minute feature-length episode, and it will be screened in cinemas.
Yeah.
So when we're doing a show next week, I will have seen it in cinemas. You can all watch it because it'll be simulcast around the world.
Yeah, I'll be watching it on TV.
So I think it'll be playing in the wee hours of the morning here in Australia.
I'll set my recorder.
And yeah, good idea. And I'm going to go off and see an 11 o'clock session at the cinema so I can sleep in on Sunday and still go and see it. And
we're going to meet here. We're going to do panels, and then we're going to talk about the show.
And look, I am so looking forward to this. I don't think I've been looking forward to an episode of television this much.
I think we can quite honestly say that next week's Geek Movie Club will be a slightly different format, because it'll be Catching Fire, the new Hunger Games movie, which we have to talk about, and it's going to be the Doctor Who special.
Yeah.
So I think we're pretty much going to be taken up with those two things next week.
I think I might even watch this Doctor Who.
You better.
I've never watched it before. Well, look, do you think this would be a wise thing to do?
Look, this one might have a little bit more history in it, so it might be harder to jump on, but the specials have always been designed to attract new viewers. Mm-hmm. So there'll be this special, the 50th, and you're lucky because a month later, if you like it, there's a Christmas special which will introduce a brand new Doctor.
Yeah, that's where we're bringing Capaldi into it, which is a great jumping on point because suddenly you've got a new Doctor.
When is that happening? Starting?
That's Christmas
Day is the final Smith and the first Capaldi, and that'll probably happen in the last 5 minutes.
Because I'm really interested in that because I like the thick of it.
We probably won't get the Capaldi series from what I'm hearing until August after that.
Oh, because it used to be like March, April.
Yeah, so. But apparently it's going to be a shorter season and they're spending a lot of time in production, but that's not confirmed yet. With BBC, we don't find out.
You never know with these things. Anyway, well, no, that's fantastic. I can't wait, and I think it's a very exciting time. If you're into Doctor Who at all, it's a very exciting time. But we do need to move on. Because I do believe Richard has some news for us. And I'm going to play this theme, because I don't actually have a theme for news, but I like this.
And the truth shall set you free!
Richard, what have you got?
I've got a bunch of interesting stories this week. Look, first of all, I have to mention this one that's been doing the rounds. And we mentioned it a few weeks ago on Behind the Panels, our other comic book podcast.
Which you can find at behindthepanels.net.
Yes, behindthepanels.net, or on iTunes at Behind the Panels. It was the Bat Kid story in San Francisco. This was the Make-A-Wish kid who... San Francisco...
This was the most heartwarming story of the year.
I'm bringing the photos up here on thing. And this is brilliant. This is a San Francisco boy who's recovering from cancer. The whole city rallied together to pretend it was Gotham City. Even wrote it down to the Gotham City Chronicle, Bat Kid Saves the Day. Look, there's not as many photos in this article that I brought up here, but...
They planted people around the city to actually be the bad guys for him to defeat.
Oh, look, it was just amazing. Had your own little Batmobile. It was wonderful. And it was just like one of those...
They actually put out a citywide list for volunteers to come and help maneuver the entire thing through the city. It was fantastic.
Apparently, even Barack Obama got in on the act after the story went viral, sending pint-sized Cape Crusader Miles Scott a video message telling him way to go.
Fantastic.
So that's brilliant. I mean, I think now...
I just want to say it for the record, because so many people have said it. We've said it before on the old Geek Action Show. Barack Obama, the geek's president.
Yes. I mean, like, I look, you know, for everything that's going wrong with Obamacare at the moment, he seems like a nice guy.
Well, he's a geek. He's into Star Trek. He's into
Spider-Man.
He was in
Spider-Man. Yeah.
He's the geek's president.
Didn't he at one point say he loved Spock from Star Wars?
Yeah, he made a mistake. But that's all right. In the heat of the moment, I've said some pretty stupid things too.
Nah, he's cool. Can I bring up? I like Barry.
I don't know.
Barry O'Bombs. That's like.
Look.
Spock was in Star Wars, right?
Yeah, Leonard Kirk, right?
Yeah, Leonard Kirk.
That's the one.
He writes I'm the one who said Hurman, right? We're all allowed a mistake once in a while.
That was wonderful. The other story that caught my attention this week was the Andy Kaufman's back from the dead, apparently. I don't know if you've been following this.
This has been going on for 30 years.
Now, this is true, but apparently this week, what actually happened was his brother brought on, was that a tribute?
Is there a video coming out? Because I can play that audio.
I don't know how long the video is, though, so I don't want to... It's probably going to be a news story, though, so there'll be a whole lot of...
Well, let's see what they have got to say. We can always cut it back, which we won't, but that's all right. Here we go.
Well, he just wanted to be a stay-at-home dad, you know, because that's why he wanted to leave the showbiz and whatever, and so he's just pretty much a great dad.
This is the video that set the web alight. With rumour Andy Kaufman may...
This is one of my friends, Tessa Stevens.
A woman.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Daughter. Appeared on stage at the Andy Kaufman Awards in New York.
Well, this is what actually happened. At first she came out and she did an Andy Kaufman tribute thing. The brother brought her out and said, we've got some news. And she said that, you know, he faked his death and that he's, you know, he's actually been alive. He's just been a stay-at-home dad, et cetera, as you heard in that clip. And then it eventually came out that, you know, she was an actress. Tatarsky, is that? No, it said actually her name was Tatarsky, apparently, is the actress. Okay. Yeah. Alexandra Tatarsky, claimed to be Kaufman's daughter. And apparently the brother, it gets stranger, because then the brother said that he wasn't aware of the joke. He actually thought it was a legitimate thing as well. So this is the weird. This has been doing the rounds on the net, but this is a little bit from the brother.
Almost 30 years after his death, a brand new Andy is alive rumor is raging through the internet just over the past 24 hours. It takes a little explanation. Andy's father started an award show years ago to honor rising stars who could have the impact that his son did in the comedic world. This year's award ceremony was on Monday, the first since Andy's father's death. He died over the summer. At the show, Andy's brother Michael took the stage and said that although he watched his brother die, he now has questions. He talked about finding in his brother's writings plans to fake his own death and then to reappear in 1999 at a certain restaurant. Michael says he showed up to the restaurant back then and was handed a letter telling him Andy was happily married with two children.
Look, I won't go on because it's quite long, but that's the basic story there that happened. So this seems to be a really complicated, convoluted hoax.
But this was Andy Kaufman's life was hoaxing.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, some people have even said, you know, that this was a hoax he planned before he died and that this would... You know, he's dead, but this is something, this is his final show.
And it wouldn't
joke.
Surprise me.
Yeah.
No, Andy Kaufman was renowned for this sort of nonsense. So.
The other story that's been debunked that I wanted to bring up, because I was going to bring it up on last week's show if we'd done one, was that apparently a Chinese man had sued his wife for delivering an extremely ugly baby. The story goes that she'd had all this.
You hear that, honey?
the story goes that apparently she'd had a whole lot of plastic surgery before they were married, and so he was claiming that she got married under false pretenses.
Oh, for goodness' sake!
And that the ugly baby was, you know, revelation that she wasn't actually that attractive herself. Now, this is all proven to be false in the end, but I just love the story. This got picked up by the Huffington Post, which is actually goes to show you that sometimes aggregating news is no substitute for investigative journalism. Yeah.
Can we all please also just put a public service announcement out there? People who think that the Huffington Post is a newspaper, it is just a blog.
Mm.
And it is an aggregator from a bunch of different sources and a bunch of people. Nobody gets paid for it.
If you didn't have the New York Times or the Sydney Morning Herald,
there's no content.
Or all these people, there would be no content.
No, exactly. You know? So let's just be aware that the Huffington Post, as much as I like the Huffington Post, because it is a great aggregator, is not a news service.
There's a great...
I did not know that at all.
There's a great movie called... It's a documentary inside the New York Times. And they're interviewing... David Carr from the New York Times is in there. And he holds up the front page of one of the major aggregators. And he's talking... Because it's basically the internet versus old media. And he says, look, you know, I love the internet. I love a lot of things. He said, look, he held up this big A4 page when it was like, look at all the stories and look at the layout. Look how wonderful it is. This is great. You can find your news. You can go across. You can find... it's really easy to see what news is trending and whatnot. That's fantastic. And he goes... Here is the same front page of their website without the New York Times, and he'd cut all the boxes out. So it was just empty boxes, which is a great point.
Because the New York Times...
Best investigator reporting on the planet.
There absolutely. I think the New York Times is, you know, often seen as a dinosaur, but I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that real journalists... are just going out and checking Twitter.
And this is spoken as people who are bloggers. We are bloggers, we are podcasters, but we make no pretense that we're breaking news.
And like, you know, at places like, and one of the things they do in that movie as well, which is great, is like the people from Vice are going, yeah, we had people over there. We sent a crew over to Afghanistan. We really got in deep and we spent some time with the families, like, you know, real street level stuff that none of these other papers are doing. And David Carr goes, just get over yourself, man. Mm. We've had people embedded in Afghanistan for 15 years. That they live and breathe there. Their life is on the line every day. They take themselves into danger.
Yeah, especially,
You've had a Kentucky holiday over there doesn't make you, you know, a journalist.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, what we do is, like, we emulate what real journalists do.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, like we have a certain sense of professionalism to what we write.
A lot of what we do is parody of what professional journalism does.
Yeah, what we do is
we don't do that thing where we like just put out a tweet and call it a.
I think it's fair enough to say that what we do is we do analysis. We read what other people have written, and we then talk about what we think of that. You know what I mean? And our interpretation of that news. We don't break news. Absolutely, I don't think in the entire 5 years or 6 years of Geek Actually have I ever broken a news story.
But that brings me back to the Huffington Post, because it's where I actually get the next story from.
I've been waiting for this story.
But I've checked several sources, and this may be the title of this week's episode, Orgasm Wars. if you go to... We'll put this link in the show notes, because...
Oh my god!
This is a real thing on a soft.
Is there video?
There is video, but it's all in Japanese.
Oh,
so,
play it. I want
to
hear it.
This is just to give you a sample of what the game show, Japanese game show, sounds like.
This is actually a show.
Yeah.
All right, we keep talking while they're in the background. Do we get to hear him moan and groan?
Oh, I don't know if it's in this video. It might be a little bit later along. Let's skip to what looks like a... Oh, here we go.
You gotta explain to them what's happening.
He just took a hair out of his mouth.
Okay, Orgasm Wars. The premise to this, and I'll keep playing the audio in the background.
Oh my god.
Is that
you should have led with this, man. You completely buried the lead on this episode.
He says, well, he said the news operator says, remember the game show Make Me Laugh? He said, well, this is basically Make Me Climax. And it's like a gay man tries to bring a straight man to orgasm against his will by blowing him for 40 minutes on camera. He's got a box over the over there. We're watching this now. The gay man is peering into the box and going straight for the thing.
I love the sound.
He said it's the is this the sound of a high speed vacuum, was what they just said in Japanese. Basically, it's a like most Japanese game shows, it's narrated, you know, dramatically for effect. You've got the little reaction shots in the corner box like you have on most Japanese game shows. Basically, it's a Japanese porn star, Ryo Sawai, meeting his opponent, which is a gay man who runs...
I like how the subtitle said, I'm so close, and then the narrator said, he says he's so closed.
So the university students can do nothing but look on and laugh. He's in ecstasy right now, and I'm hoping to begin my effort to finish him off. It's basically what the Iron Chef with blowjobs.
I'm sorry, I don't care. You can be the straightest man on the planet. If you're getting a blowjob, you're gonna blow. I'm sorry.
But if it's 40 minutes. Although I don't know, you can't see what this guy looks like. He's quite a large man, and he's taking his shirt off. Watch it. Hang on. He's taking his shirt off. He's wearing a man's ear. He's wearing a bra, and oh, the look on Sawai's face. He said, I was close, but I'm determined not to come. Next up is my final secret technique,
throat hold.
Oh,
here we go. Oh, do we have sound?
He's going in. Oh, quick, turn it up. Time left, 10 minutes.
Okay. That sound.
I want to see if we get to the end what happens here.
It looks like he's coming to me.
Hey! He's grabbed some tissues. He's done.
He's done.
Oh,
man. Oh, this is quality television, people.
Holy crap. What are they going to do this in Australia, man?
I mean, there's been articles about this, what this actually means for...
A lot came out,
didn't it? It's so frustrating, though. Yeah, but a lot came out.
Oh, man.
And so the winner in this battle was the man who can definitely make his opponent come, Takaya of Shinjuku Area 2.
Congratulations to you, sir.
This has gotten a lot of media attention. It's talking a lot about what, you know, attitudes towards sex in Japan. And people often think of it as this weird nation. And it's not. Look, I've been to Japan a lot. And one of my best friends in the world lives over there. And I speak to him every week. And there is some weird stuff happening.
Yes.
In Japan. But statistics show that actually Japanese are turning away from sex. And apparently 35 to 40% of people aged in, you know, prime sexual ages aren't having or interested in sex, because it's a lot to do with the work ethic there as well, apparently, which is, you know, if you leave for work at 6 a.m. and finish work at midnight, who's got time for sex? So this show, we should say, is on a, I think it's like a soft porn cable channel or something like that.
I want that channel here.
Yeah. Well, SBS is showing a bunch of Japanese game shows on a Saturday night.
Maybe we'll
get
this one.
Maybe this is it.
And to be fair, we didn't see anything.
No, there was a box.
That's what made it so weird that there's a box there. It's like, without that box, we probably would have been like, yeah, it's a game show, you know? Like,
yeah, it's weird. Yeah. This is my favorite story.
I just want to know if they
ever
gave him knee pads before he had to go down for 45 minutes.
I know, he looked pretty well padded to me. if you're searching for anything, just look for Orgasm Wars. And on the Huffington Post, there is the Not Safe for Work video.
And trust me, people, it is worth going to have a look at.
Oh, right. Yeah, the sounds didn't do it justice. I think that sort of brings us to our quiz. And God, I hope it's Orgasm. But I really hope.
Which actor is this?
All right, as we are trying to make a tradition, because the show's only been going for 2 episodes, we don't have traditions yet, but as we're trying to make a tradition, Dave Longo is going to give us a quiz. How are you going? Oh.
Hey, what happened there?
Maybe not.
Please tell.
Quiz, hot shot. There's a bomb on a bus. Once the bus goes 50 miles an hour, the bomb is armed. If it drops below 50, it blows up. What do you do? What do you do?
Okay.
Please tell me that this quiz doesn't involve me blowing Dave before.
We have a nice clear under the desk now.
Holy hell.
All right, guys. All right, here we go.
You can't look at the computer, Richard.
Okay,
that's
sure.
Cheating.
I'll swing this around here so I don't know.
Okay, today is another audio-based one.
I'll use my special deep throat technique.
That's a big tweet.
I thought it was a throat hold, wasn't it?
That's throat hold.
Throat hold.
Yeah, okay. So
and all I can say to, all I can say to that is,
that's a big Twinkie.
Okay.
This man has no dick.
Get your tampon out, Dave. Okay, so this quiz is, how well do you guys know your drama TV shows?
All right.
So what I've done is I've taken a list from the internet, was the top 10 most watched drama TV shows.
Sorry, one moment.
I could make you come.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play about 10 seconds of each theme song from a drama show, and I want to see how quickly you guys get it.
Okay.
So they start off easier and get a little bit harder, but it was just the order from the website, so here we go. Here's the first one, number 10.
I'm listening. I know that one, teacher.
Yeah.
Just yell it out, yell it out.
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, all right. Oh, they're not playing. Here we go.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Orgasm Wars.
I know this, Hold on. Newsroom.
Newsroom, yeah. Well done. Yeah. This one is for Richard. I've got a HBO sound before it. I apologize.
HBO!
Sorry.
Oh, Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire.
That's actually the Brian Jonestown Massacre. Oh,
is it?
Yeah.
It's such a good theme. We should play it. Here's one more for number six.
I'm going to guess. I don't know, but I'm going to guess. Is it Justified?
No.
Is it Hell on Wheels?
Right into this world.
Oh, is it...
Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, Sons of Anarchy.
No. I've never watched it.
Nope. I highly recommend it.
Is it Sons of Anarchy?
Oh, I know this. Mad Men?
Mad Men.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you guys would know that straight away.
I've only watched two episodes of Mad Men in my entire life. I just know the theme.
I've never watched it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I actually find Mad Men incredibly boring.
Look, I got to say, when there's orgasm...
Don Draper,
now that I know...
I'd rather watch Orgasm Wars.
I got to say, now
hey,
that
we should get Joss Whedon to make this into a show.
Now that I know about Orgasm Wars, the Doctor Who marathon scrapped. I'll be coming back with an Orgasm Wars report.
This week... I got to go see if I can find torrents of Orgasm Wars.
Yeah. This week, Takashi came.
Next week on Orgasm Wars. Oh, and that's it. Oh. Number four.
Oh, House of Cards.
House of Cards.
I haven't seen it. Oh, I'm thinking, Oh, I don't know.
That one is the Emmy Award-winning show Homeland.
And I've actually watched the whole first season of Homeland, and I didn't pick up on that at all. Really not.
Come on.
Justified?
No.
Deadwood?
No, it's not Deadwood.
Breaking Bad.
Right. Do you want another one? Secret Confession. I've watched one episode of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I've never gotten into it either. I know now that it's done, I can watch it.
Yeah,
all.
Me too. I've got the first season on my phone.
Have I mentioned that I've watched 270 episodes of Doctor Who in the last in the last 2 months?
Well, last one, number one.
Yeah.
That's
Sounds of Silence. Oh, I know this. This is Dexter.
This is Dexter, yeah.
I think you've won this one.
One of the great
The
great
theme, hey.
Is you know what? Leave that play. How long have you got on that?
The whole theme.
All right. I'm just going to bring this down. Bring this down in the background here, because it's time for us to go, boys. Anyway, I know. So, Richard, where can people find more of you on the internet?
They can find me at therealbits.com. That's the REEL bits, the recently despammed website. They can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits. You can find me at behindthepanels.net, as well as their other podcast, Behind the Panels, and weekly on Orgasm Wars.
And Dave Longo, where can
you also find me watching Orgasm Wars now? On
no,
on
I'm
a
actually
regular basis.
I'm starring on Orgasm Wars. I think.
Richard and I are going to stage one. Okay, you can find me at Dave Longo on Twitter and DaveGoodCup.com.
Fantastic. And you can find me at Dave McKay on Twitter or at GeekActually.com. And everybody out there, you should remember always to do this. And we'll see you all next week.
Wait, can we call this episode Catfishing the Counselor with Orgasm Wars?
I think Orgasm Wars is plenty enough. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Peace out.